Littlefinger was no threat to anyone. A clever, smiling, genial man. Everyone's friend. Always able to find whatever gold the king or his hand required, and yet of such undistinguished birth. One step from a hedge knight. He was not a man to fear. He had no banners to call, no army of retainers, no great stronghold, no holdings to speak of, no prospects of a great marriage.
Welcome to 2C1C, the Game of Thrones podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to GRRM and FFG for making this possible, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons music you hear in this episode. Welcome to Season 4.5.
Got to throw some Littlefinger love out there. I mean, after last week's episode of the show, I'm pretty pumped. Littlefinger's one of my favorite characters.
Have you guys ever played Final Fantasy Tactics?
Yeah.
Of course.
Remember the side character, like your buddy at the start of the game, who ends up like ruling the kingdom? Spoiler for a 15-year-old game.
man, it's been like that long since I played it, so I don't remember the details.
Is it the little? I can't remember who it is.
Delilah. You have this little buddy.
Oh, yeah.
He betrays you and takes over the kingdom, and you're just like, I'm going to run away forever. And he's like, yeah, I roll now. That's Littlefinger.
Good man. Well, welcome to a new episode of Two Champs and a Chump, where I think listeners are probably hearing a brand new voice throwing out spoilers left and right here.
Whoops. Hi, I'm Aaron Glazer, New York Meta.
Yeah, Aaron was kind enough to step in this week. Kyle had something pop up pretty suddenly, and Aaron actually has kind of been begging me to appear on the show for a while now.
On my hands and knees.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was doing something on his hands and knees. I'm not sure it was begging, but...
Hey, what happens at Worlds stays at Worlds.
So, yeah, it's going to be a good episode this week, I think. Also with me is my stalwart squire, Mr.
Daryl Lloyd. I will be your champion.
Really? I was more picturing you as Podrick Payne.
Podrick Payne's really fucking bad. Are we sure?
He's huge in the pants.
Yeah, good point. Let's see. Who should I be imagining Daryl as instead? I can't think of any squires in the books now. Pretty much just Pod and...
What about that squire that gets cut in half by Gregor Clegane? I'll be that guy.
Yeah, ooh, that's a good choice.
Yeah, I'll be that squire.
All right, I expect you to...
call you half-man?
Yes, Daryl is a half-man.
Yeah, only half of a man. You guess which half.
Yeah, top, bottom, left, right, front, back. I'm not sure. We bear news of a new spoiler. Liked that transition there? Because it was really terrible.
Yes, we do have a new spoiler. And it's pretty good.
It's a card. I mean, it is, well, you know, frankly, I'm going to admit, it's kind of a bit of a letdown after the Mad King being spoiled at the beginning of the week. It's really going to be hard to compete with that.
Not as flashy, but it's got something to it. I'm just not sure it's in what the Mad King's creator Bruno would call the only game that matters.
Yeah.
It might be a melee card.
There's a good chance of that. Let's see. So we've got it here. It is actually another Targ card. Would one of you fine gents want to lay it on us since I read that quote?
Absolutely. What we've got here is a Targ attachment. It is simply called Call. It is unique. It is cost 1, has the title trait, It is prize 2, and it says, attached to your house card. Response, after you play a prized card, kneel attached house card to choose a character. That character gains deadly and does not kneel to attack or defend during power challenges until the end of the round. It is until the end of the round.
Mm-hmm.
Epic.
So, maybe epic phase stuff?
Yeah, what's the target epic battle do again? Gets attachments back, I think? I should have double-checked that, because I actually did not notice that until the end of the round, until you pointed that out. I was thinking it said phase.
Hmm. So, let's talk about the actual card.
That sounds like a superb idea.
Let's.
Okay, in Joust, I think Bloodthirst and Seasons are a little too prominent for this card. They mean that every Targ deck is going to play Viserys, you know, that D card, Daryl. And
that's right. Maybe Lost, I don't know yet.
The Lost Message is showing up an awful lot, and I didn't think that would be played. But the Lost Message is showing up an awful lot. So giving up 2 power for something that's going to be used once is an awful lot. But you guys have more melee experience. Do you see much attachment hate in melee?
I personally play it, but I don't see it much from other people. I would argue they probably should play it, because there's a lot of solid attachments that do a lot of work in melee. Of course, Taste for Blood and Support of Harlaw, I would say, are right at the top of that list. And if you can knock those off, you can really wreck someone's game plan in a melee game.
It's a really good point.
I haven't really put attachment tech in my deck since Maesters was really a thing in Melee. So I think you get away with a lot more in Melee. And I'm not sure if this card, maybe some of the other prized house card attachments could be seeing enough play to make people add attachment hate, but there's not a ton of it rolling around.
I mean, even if you can get this to go off like twice, it's going to be awfully insane with dragons that are now deadly and not kneeling for 2 power challenges, because I'm assuming you're running air to the Iron Throne.
I'm definitely assuming that too. And it providing that kind of redundancy there, so you don't have to have Danny on the board to make him not kneel, is pretty nice.
Well, not even that, just that. Let's piggyback on the Beyond the Wall Mad King, because that Mad King renown, if that can make 2 standing power challenges.
Mm-hmm.
It's prized itself, so it doesn't even have to be the first turn. You can play it the turn after. It's going to get, assuming since melee, you're probably going to get unopposed, with 2 renown and assuming 1 claim, that's 6 power just for that one card being played that turn.
Yeah.
And along with deadly. Getting dragons and everything else.
Yeah.
He's probably pushing that through with the deadly, too. And that's not even counting the brand new Fire Made Flesh event from the chapter pack of the same name, which is itself prized. So I could see that being a really sweet turn when you're able to go ahead and play Cal. Well, you know, obviously it's going to be the next turn before you're able to use Fire Made Flesh and trigger Cal off of the Fire Made Flesh, since you have to kneel your house card. But, you know, you get a little power one turn. If you make it to that second turn and are able to do both and have these not-kneelers with a bunch of renown and power challenges, I think that's looking really solid.
Well, you know how you're not supposed to look scary at all in melee?
Mm-hmm.
With this deck, it doesn't necessarily matter anymore, because you can just run those dragons and not care. You run those dragons and and the Mad King, and you don't especially care about threats to you that are going to try and take those characters off the board. You can stack power on them, especially with Cold Hands Restricted.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank goodness.
I think that the prized mechanic as a whole is really going to do some sweet things for Melee. As far as we've gone, we haven't even played really any Melee games with prized cards. At least I haven't yet.
I've been wary of them, I do have to say.
But, you know, I think there's something to be said for giving someone 2 power just to take it away. You know, if they don't have anyone to support them, or even if they do, now you're not kneeling to attack, though, and that person would have to defend, you know. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be really interesting for Melee. For Joust, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I would play this in Joust, but...
I mean, I'm intrigued to give it a try. You know, it keeps feeling more and more as time has gone by over the last couple of years that FFG is trying to push like a Power Rush sub-theme and make Targ the other powerhouse, power space house, not powerhouse one word. They were already a powerhouse. You know, so that we've got two houses that kind of excel in a particular challenge. And every time they get something else, the Dothraki non-unique guy that gets renown on power challenges, the dragons, the agenda, Fire Made Flesh, now Cal, I keep wondering if there isn't going to be some kind of deck, some kind of legit rush Targ deck that's going to hit critical mass soon. I tried out that Conquest to Baratheon Targ deck a few weeks back at the first League night and was actually super happy with how it played, being able to combine some nice targeted Targ removal with some solid Bera Rush. And the more of these cards we get, the more I think, well, maybe I can drop all that out-of-house stuff and give it a try. I don't know if it's there yet. I haven't gotten to, but I'm intrigued.
I truly believe that of aggro, rush, and control, the goal of FFG is for every house to have a different option for each. So I think Targ is going to get a power rush, but it's just going to be a very different power rush built in a very different way than the others. Because power rush is there for Stark. It's there for Lannister. It's certainly there for Martell and Baratheon. I think it might be there or getting there for Greyjoy and Targ. Every house is going to be able to do everything just with a different flavor, and that flavor will be why you play that house.
Yeah, as long as the flavor is different, and the four that you mentioned that are able to do Rush right now, I would say it is a very different flavor for each one of them. So if they keep that up, I'll be pretty happy with that.
So, yeah, that is Cal. It's interesting.
Hey, one more thing for Cal, especially in combination with... What's this stupid face? With the Mad King?
Mm-hmm.
Blood Orange Grove will trigger that again. I know it's an out-of-house card that's a little expensive, but if you don't want Cal to die, getting rid of Noble Crest is probably a great idea, right? So you can get rid of Noble Crest and then make your Mad King not kneel to attack the power challenges.
Yeah, lots of fun.
Seems like a good idea. Got some... interesting tidbits coming along with this newest cycle as far as, you know, utilizing out-of-house cards and things like that with the prize keyword. I've had a blast with it so far.
So far, so good.
I don't know about good, but...
interesting.
I mean, it is me building these decks, but it's been fun.
All right. There goes Cal.
Yeah. Riding off into the sunset. So the next segment I think that we wanted to hit on this week was a little bit having to do with some regionals preparations and thoughts, which for many of our listeners, of course, are in the U.S., which started this past weekend. So we're a little late there due to the chapter pack review. But also, many of our listeners are across the narrow sea, and their regionals started even earlier. So we're actually dipping into that here in the middle of the full-blown regional season, which has some pluses and minuses here, because it does give us some room to talk a bit more about what sort of decks are currently showing up after FAQ 5.0. So... we'll probably start in the more broad sense what we like to do to prepare for these sorts of events, and then dial it down and talk for just a couple minutes about each of these builds and how they look. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Good.
Okay. So who wants to step up to bat first? What would you say is the most important thing for you in regional preparation?
I'm completely insane. So I've got four things I do. First and foremost, I keep personal stats. Like, if I play a game against anyone I think is remotely a quality player, I know what I played, what they played, and what turned the game. If I won, why I won. If I lost, why I lost. And in these, I'm especially not scared to try things. Against a local meta player recently, he was playing Dothraki aggro with Narrow Escape. Mm-hmm. I had like 6 cards in hand, and he was only getting back like 1, so I should have just, you know, ignored the Narrow Escape and let him have the 1. I chucked my hand, because it's a casual game, and I need to see how things happen. Because in a major tournament, you never know what's going to happen. So I chucked my hand, and ended up going like 9 plots before I lost, but knowing how to play from behind in that way is hugely important in a major tournament.
Yeah, that's dedication, particularly with the stats there. So, you know, like, how many games would you say you have stats on this regional season, for instance?
I don't know, something like, 20-ish. It's not a whole ton, but once I start narrowing down what I want to play, I'm only making 1 regional because, shoot me, I'll be in England for their Road to Stalag tournament, Battle of Blackwater, during the BC regional, so I only get New York. But
well, poor you.
Yeah, you'll still be hitting a tournament, so I think that'll be okay.
Well, you know, God bless Drunk Sandy, who convinced me to go and was like, you can stay in my hotel. It's all sorts of glorious. But awesome. My one regional, I'm doing a crazy amount of planning, but it also means I've had a lot of free time. So that deck that Dark Notch played, that Stark deck, I got to co-build with him and literally every night do a phone call like this and sit there and, you know, tweak the deck and be like, okay, where's the meta now? And make that one little change and those 2 little changes until it became something of a monster. So that's the second major thing I do, build with other great players. New York is doing this as a whole now, which is leading to all sorts of awesome results that I'm not allowed to share. But New York is doing this as a whole, and the results have been like staggeringly good. We apparently have taken a leap in the past year. And just side building, I never mix decks with like Dark Nodge, and side building with Tagore, and just whoever is good who's around and like is willing to, you know, talk decks, always build and find out their ideas and find out why they do things.
Mm-hmm.
Next, the Annals of Castle Black is a fantastic resource. You don't have to be as completely insane as I am, but I more or less write down what number of each house has made the cut each week. And then I look at how they've changed, what number, how many people have made the cut with that this week. The meta changes stupidly quickly. I've said this before, but like winter is the perfect example for this. At first, winter was everywhere because winter is better than summer with the new fact. And then winter was tech 4, and now winter is in very few decks, so do you need to tech for it? And at that point, if no one's teching for or playing winter, how good is summer? Are people going to start playing? And then once summer's good, does Song of Ice come into vogue? It becomes cyclical, but it changes almost like every 2 weeks. So if you're not paying attention, you're going to miss stuff.
Yeah, the rate at which information is disseminated now versus how it was like when I first started playing this game is astounding.
Yeah.
I'm terrified of the New York Regional. We have like Simone, one of the best players in the world, JC Wama, one of the best players in the world. We have Alex Hines coming down, one of the best players in the world. All the New York people, like Struhal, who's been second in the world, Stroms, who's probably the best target player, and it's just like, I'm not even making the cut. This is like, it's getting depressing. I know how you guys feel with Xylar and Greg all the time.
Hey, wait a minute. I still make the cut at most every event that I attend.
I don't.
It just stalls out there.
Okay, the very, very last thing I do is if you're intending to be a competitive player and you don't do this, reassess. Get in the Skype group. I don't have the information handy, but it's really easy to find. Post on Makeout Cards, post on Card Game DB. Just ask somebody you know. Someone will add you. Get in the Skype group. People just drop all sorts of brilliant nuggets there. The regulars like Florian and Rabs and,
and Alex Tagore, that you mentioned.
Alex. Just the regular people there just, like, think of the game at a higher level than almost everyone. And they just, like, casually drop nuggets that they don't think are secret tech or great ideas. But if you're just getting into the competitive scene, you're like, oh my god, I never knew that. So get in there, listen, pay attention, learn. Yeah, that's 4 steps.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of those really overlap with the sort of things that I do, and I definitely wanted to bring up the Skype group because one thing that I really like to do, I don't go so far into the like kind of communal deck building and tweaking like it sounds like you do, but I definitely try to touch base with players from different metas, because when you play in one area and you play the same people week after week or whatever, you can kind of get into a certain sort of groove. But for larger events like regionals, it's much more likely that people are coming from all over, and you can't always predict just, you know, based on knowing that, hey, I always play with Daryl and these are the sort of decks he's got, what's going to happen. So I definitely try to make sure I'm touching base with people all over. Hey, what are you seeing lately? You know, what do you think about Stark House of Dreams Children's Tower? Is that gonna take the world by storm?
I mean, it's a B card. It's obviously going to.
Yeah, exactly. It's
never go wrong with a B.
I'm going to be honest. I don't even remember which tower that is.
I believe the Children's
top five for a character.
Yeah, the Children's is the only semi-decent one.
Okay, yeah, that one's bearable. That one is actually.
Well, the others are like super F bombs, but you know whatever.
Yeah, well,
like if you're running those in your deck that you're bringing to a tournament, let's quote Sandy and you know cause controversy. Don't be shitty.
Hey. It's surprisingly accurate advice.
It really is. If you're playing these cards and everyone's like, those are shitty cards, you might be right, but odds are you're being shitty.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, I will admit, you can't rule it out completely, because Bruno friggin' played Cannot Be Bribed, Cannot Be Bought in that Baratheon TLV deck that he won with, and still going to say that's a pretty crappy card.
It's a terrible card, but you add, like, dude, if you're adding 1/3 of for a crappy card out of 60, whatever. Like, if you're good enough, you can play around it. If you're playing like, oh, no one's ever used these 12 cards in these combinations before, stop. Just, like, net deck a little bit more.
Yeah, and that, I think, is another important thing in regional prep. In my opinion, don't be afraid to net deck. It can have some negative connotations, depending on who you talk to and exactly what you're doing. In my mind, it's not exactly just literally playing the exact build that won in Stalic or, you know, whatever it might be. It's taking a look at those winning lists, because they're out there now like they didn't used to be years ago, and being able to see the cards that are in them, being able to look at what's making it tick and find some of the cool interactions there. And, you know, in your meta, you may need to make some tweaks here and there to account for some of the stuff that you see in your area. In fact, I encourage that. But being able to find that starting point is important.
Well, if you're going to make a bunch of tweaks based on your meta, you also need to play a fair amount of outside your meta. And that's, you don't necessarily have to play a fair amount, but you should play on either Octagon or talk to someone who has an idea of the larger meta, because ideas trickle down, especially if the player is famous. Like, I mean, not Greg, because Greg is a mad genius, but like, when Bruno played TLV, TLV was a complete joke. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone thought TLV was the drizzling shits. And then all of a sudden, Bruno played it, and every third deck was like, Bruno won with it, so it must be good.
Yeah, like, there's a certain element of, like, hero worship there, too, though, that I think kind of skews opinions. Not that I'm saying TLV was bad, but...
Oh, no, sure, but you have to be aware of it. You have, like, if you don't know what... I mean, and the best players don't advertise nearly as much, they don't have the kind of big mouth that I do, but... Like, if Bruno's posted a deck and you're not aware of what that deck is, you are way behind the eight ball, because there's tech you didn't even think to prepare for. So, Bruno adds this random card that, like, everyone thought was terrible. And you just never played that card. It's not a great card, as far as everyone on Earth knows. But because he played it, And you can replace Bruno with like 6 or 7 people that might post a deck. But if once Bruno plays it, you need to have an answer for it. The answer might be super simple. Like, the answer isn't always really complicated. It's not always like a fancy card. But you just need to know, because people will copycat. People will play. There's very few truly creative people in this game. And that's not to say that that's frowned upon, and that's not to say I don't admire the crap out of them. But if most people are going to play the norm, you need to know what the accepted norm is.
Right. Or, now, I don't want to delve too much into a side conversation on creativity in the game, so I'll just kind of nod there and say, you know, I think that's a topic we should come back to for another episode. I think there's something to be discussed there.
So I guess it's come down to what I like to do to prepare for regionals.
Yeah.
Every year it's been different, really. I'll pretty much tell you what you should do, because I haven't always done it the way I'm supposed to. So let's go back like 4 years ago, when I actually had a halfway decent deck and did halfway decently in a tournament. And what I did is I played a lot of games. I mean, I played a lot of games. I was with Greg. It was at least twice a week, which is a lot if you know Greg. And we would play all the time and tweak the, you know, it all starts with the idea of your deck and what you want to accomplish. And then for me, it's playing that deck consistently all the time, not messing around with these other things, not getting distracted by these other shiny decks, because someone who knows their deck inside and out has an edge on the guy who may have a higher tier deck, but he just put it together a week ago. Or the night before, unless, of course, he's one of those super high-level players. But
I mean, we've had several champs win with a deck they literally built the night or before or morning of.
I realize this. This is for the average Joe. This is for us humans. It's just play as much as you can, and communication is huge. Talking to, obviously, all the really good players who play the game. Anyone you can. Sharing information when you can is always good. That is what I have found to be the most useful, as well as understanding the metagame. Yes, the metagame does change quite a bit. I think there are always things that are pretty consistent for the most part. You know, without his beard is a bad card. You don't have to tech against that card. You're not going to see it. I think understanding the parts of the meta which... or like, well, should I put 3 paper shields in my deck? You know, that's the kind of question you want to have. You know, paper shield can go in any deck, and it can be a great answer. But is the meta running things that are worth canceling? So, that, you know, understanding what you're doing. If you're a player who is in a smaller town, maybe you don't have very many people you play with. I mean, the Skype group is a great place to find people. The forums are a great place to find people to talk to. Make some friends. The Thrones community is super awesome, and it's not hard to just sit there and shoot the shit with somebody and talk about, you know, what they're doing. What?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that is a point that can't be stressed enough. The community, by and large, is super awesome. So if you're out here listening to our podcast or one of the others or something and just kind of absorbing things passively like that, you know, really go sign up for an account at CardGameDB or AGOT Cards or something and go ahead and, you know, take part in the conversation. If you see one of those guys that won a tournament, you know, post somewhere, feel free to respond to them. Shoot them a message. Like, most everybody I've ever met in Thrones has been, you know, perfectly willing to respond and chat with you a bit about it.
I'm a baby in the community. I've been here for a year and a couple months now. It might seem like longer, it might not, but I've barely been here, and I know, like, 3/4 of the community. This is the nicest group of people I've ever met. It's all relatively young people who are professional, who take life seriously, and who use this as an escape and are really happy to enjoy it.
Absolutely. We've propped the community a million times, but it really is just a great group of people. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. Anyways.
On the other hand, don't let that make you feel bad when you crush them mercilessly in a tournament.
Oh, no. That's encouraged. Crush people's dreams. No takesy backseats in tournaments. The last thing that I would say in terms of preparation, so we've talked about knowing the meta. We've talked about communicating. Obviously, the whole, I think the one message is information. Gather information. You're going to a regional. You have to get outside of your play group if you want an edge, or if you want at least to know, if you want to be on the level even. But the last thing I would say is learn to make the hard cuts. Now, if you're already leading up to a regional, you should probably have already had your deck completely fleshed out. But sometimes there's a few cards in there. Now, I'm not saying you have to cut down to an even 60 or anything like that. But sometimes you need to evaluate the cards that are in your deck and make sure that you don't have something that's so situational you've only played it in, like, two out of the last 10 games you've played. I mean, maybe that works for you, but it doesn't work for me. So learn to make the hard cuts. Talk to some other players. You know, look at my deck. Look at this. What do you think about it? I mean, obviously try to give it to somebody who's not going to be at your regional. Information is important. But if you can, you know, give it to somebody. Tell them, hey, take a look. What do you think I can change about this? Or what do you think I should try? And give it a shot, whether it's swapping something out or getting rid of something or adding something. There's nothing wrong with those last-minute tweaks, you know. You tune up your hot rod before you go to a race. You might as well tune up your deck before you, you know, drop some salami on some fools. So,
hey, while we're at that, because just thought of the card, because Bruno said it, and I just want to echo it. If you're running negative two reducers, can you please stop that? Like, just
Negative two reducers.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I've seen one.
Oh, God. Whenever Bruno said it on this podcast, he was like, whenever I see a negative reducer, I know I'm in for an easy game. And on the on Octagon, I just run into negative reducers. I'm like, oh, man, I guess it's time to try some weird shit. Let's see how this works.
So no Bloody Keeps, no Hall of Heroes, nothing like that coming into your deck.
Oh, and if you're running Crossroads and it's not TLV, you might want to try a new game.
I at least pulled Crossroads to try in that Martell Maester's deck. They didn't wind up making the cut, but I thought about it.
I want that card to be good so badly.
Yeah.
Oh, we all do.
Well, there was this brief shining moment, this small window where it was playable.
In like 2009.
Like last year? Yeah. I want a regional with two Crossroads.
Yeah, I mean, there were Crossroads in my Martell TLV. Yeah, I think it was also two. And
you made me play that terrible Martell card. The Neil 3 influence and the card to, like, discard something?
Yeah, dude.
Was the Pike Phalanx?
Spear Phalanx.
Yeah, Spear Phalanx. Now, at the time,
dude, what a shit
Spear
card.
Phalanx was great. I never was sad to see it.
Yeah, I was sad to see it every time I saw it, and I lost games because of it.
Really? Completely opposite experience. When I had him, I could push challenges through with his deadly if I needed it, or if they had something threatening, like, say it was a rusted Maester build or something like that, then he could just knock them right out of play.
Hmm.
Not for nothing, but if you're running Rusted Maesters, you have to run at least a little bit of burn.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good idea. Of course, he's if I remember it, a no attachments, 4-strength army, so that makes him a little tougher than other guys.
That is very true. Very true.
Do they have 4-strength? I thought they had 3.
No, they're 4. They're 5-4.
Yeah, they're 5-4. Definitely 5-4. But every time I drew them, I played them literally, I was like, I love Will's ideas! And I played them in the Octagon tournament right around then. And they were the bane of my existence. They were my maiden's bane.
Really? Wow. I guess different strokes for different folks or something. You're never going to listen to any of my ideas again, are you?
I listen to your ideas all the time.
Oh, okay, good.
I mean, you know, not on locations, which you can't really, but everything else. All right, so since I've been begging for this for oh so long, I want to do something at least a little bit special. I picked three decks that are at least very interesting for each house that I want to talk about. I decided to go from least important to more least effective current house to most effective current house, and want to start with Braithian. What Braithian build are we starting with, guys?
You know, I'm fine with starting in the order you sent in your list there. And I would also throw out, I think I agree that Braithion is probably at the bottom of that heap right now.
Poor Braithion. They got like a half a season of shine. And then it was like, by the way, you suck again. Kick.
Yeah, it turns out the meta as a whole really hates it when Braithion is on top. I lived through that once before in about 2005. And people just really despised that regional season so badly. I'm not quite sure why, but now that we've done it twice, I think it's a fact.
But by the end of the regional season, no one had... Well, let's... Okay, we're not starting in my order, because I'm just going to start talking about Knights of the Hollow Hill.
Okay, because fair enough.
we had answers to Knights of the Hollow Hill by the end of the season, like Siege and Blood. There's all sorts of random crap could handle it. They were still like, no, let's beat the shit out of this deck.
Mm-hmm.
Does this work at all anymore?
Does what? Baratheon Knights of the Hollow Hill?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I think without access to the Red Keep now,
yeah,
it's pretty womp womp. And Mel's Schemes is also on the restricted list. Bummer.
Yeah, our big Barrett Knights of Hollow Hill player down here definitely jumped ship. Of course, he may be being a little just experimental. He actually moved that deck to Song of Ice, of all things.
Wow.
But he definitely didn't want to stick with trying it out of Knights of Hollow Hill anymore.
I love Knights of the Hollow Hill. It's like, it's how I started playing the game. It was because I love Martell, so it was pretty much how I started. I'm not sure Braithian needs much more than three influence on a given turn, given the way things work. And Mel's Scheme and Dale should work. But there's Rush in the meta now. And, like, what really screws it over, almost more than so much else that everyone forgets about, is Bungled. Because what do you do to stop Rush without Bungled?
Yeah, well, maybe play a Rookery or something, right? Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe, actually, maybe.
I don't know, maybe.
Really good idea.
Yeah, and the Vera Rookery, does it trigger? It triggers off of losing a power challenge, right?
I believe
Veil
so.
Veil Rookery is losing Dominance.
Dominance, right.
So you can lose Dominance if you're Knights of the Hollow Hill deck. Just don't play shit. Like, throw out a bunch of locations and be like, hey, Alar, go away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not actually the worst idea. Darrow might have just cracked the deck.
Maybe.
There we go.
I wouldn't count on that. But I think that the Baron Knights of the Hollow Hill, I mean, it was a fun deck. It was ridiculous. But I really don't think it's one of their top decks right now. Maybe I'm wrong, but I've been experimenting with some different Vera options now, which has mainly been Knights of the Realm, actually, with some Shadows, and have had decent success. But I also play like some janky cards in there. But I think that that's probably one of the better ways to go right now with Baratheon. But maybe there's somebody out there right now who is still making Baron Knights of the Hollow Hill work. But that person, I don't know them. So,
well, if Greg hasn't made it work with his own deck, like his own agenda, I think we can move on to Knights.
Let's move on to Knights.
What are you using for Restricted in that Shadows deck?
Mine is Preston Greenfield.
Yeah, good. That's what I think too.
Yeah, I don't blame you at all. Being able to pop him in and out in order to trigger the black cells, you know,
yes.
add infinitum is pretty awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, it just ensures that you're going to have a knight around after the Valor turn. So, you know, you're always popping him back. I mean, very few times will I pop another Kingsguard back in the shadows. I mean, it's just got to be Preston. He's so good, so much survivability. You can still use him during challenges. Like, he's money.
He's absolutely one of the very best players in the game. Like, Dale got to be one of the very best cards in the game for like 4 months. Preston, restricted or not, will be one of the very best cards in the game for a long time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we could sit here and talk about Preston forever, but I will say slightly, I think one of the cool things about Preston is the same thing that made Mira Reed so good. What still makes her good is that she, you know, she'll pop back, and it's just hard to deal with her. And it's the exact same thing for Preston. It's just hard to deal with him, even though he doesn't have any keywords except for, I mean, he has no attachments, but you know what I mean. He doesn't have any kind of crazy keywords or anything, but he just keeps coming back. And when you're triggering multiple black cells, if you can get one out, awesome. If you can get two out, your opponent's having a really bad day. But, yeah, right now, Knights, I think, is just the way to go with Bera. I know that Noble Cause is very fun, and there are people who have done some cool stuff with Noble Cause, but I just don't see it being the unstoppable force that the T1 decks are right now.
All right, I'll get into this at great length later, but let's jump to Noble Cause, because Noble Cause has that one big card advantage problem, right?
Right.
FFG and their Infinite Wisdom has basically solved that with Rivers, no?
Sure.
It really helps.
That's not a bad way to go right now. Crossing the Mummer's board is absurd.
But Barry even has a couple acceptable warships that you could even run Floodwaters off and just be like, by the way, I just got three extra cards.
Yeah. What are you thinking? Sala's Escort Ship?
I like Sala's Escort Ship a lot more than most people do. I haven't seen it get a lot of play. That's the plus one, negative one, right?
Right.
Yeah, if you can give your guy plus one and then just take one away when they're not expecting it, that wins an awful lot of challenges for you.
It does. That two-strength swing is pretty solid.
Yeah, I always just... Salas always gets cut from my Bera decks every time. I mean, it just costs too much for such a small effect. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the tough thing. The effect is solid. The cost just gets me every time, though.
FFG right now is starting to skew the cost down. They're realizing that players aren't going to play three cost locations unless they're bonkers, you know.
Well, I think part of that is Corey's agenda.
Yes, it most certainly has to be.
Right. Could be. Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad reason.
Like, everyone likes to give you shit, and God knows I do, about how wrong you were about that agenda breaking the game. And it didn't, but not because of anything you guys knew about then. There was all sorts of other shit that happened, too. And Card Game DB is back, so I've got the other Bera warships.
There we go.
Got Black Bertha, the naval attacker for a dupe, which is really good if you're rushing.
Yeah, it's not bad, really.
Fury, discard two to stand.
I do like Fury.
I don't Huntress, like Fury.
Lord or Captain gains a melee renown. That's complete bullshit and Noble Cause. And the best of the best, King Robert's Hammer.
Indeed.
Ah, the Hammer. You know, I like the Hammer, but at least here in Missouri, we're still rolling around with winter. So the Hammer is really not as good a pick right now. Leading into bigger tournaments, maybe, but I mean, it's a nice... Go ahead.
No. The meanie is once Hammer gets good, Maesters get good.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you're not wrong. Damn that Steel Link, which I love so much.
Oh, it allows such sick stuff, I'll just say.
So, the Noble Cause deck with Rivers, you want to have two plots that aren't Rivers. With Art of Seduction, Rivers, and, what the hell's? I lost my train of thought. But there was a third.
Depends what your restricted is, but, Greg won that, that I don't. I think this was a store championship or a regional. I don't remember what it was in Tulsa, but he was using Fear Winter.
Fearworks. What the hell was? I really lost my train of thought. Narrowscape Works, but yeah. There was totally a third idea that I had there. But
a third restricted or plot slot?
As it was a plot slot.
Gotcha.
But there was another plot that wasn't a river that was a really good idea besides art. But it's long gone, so no stress.
Oh, I mean, you could do negotiations.
Mm. Once you're running rivers, you very likely won't need them.
Yeah, I don't think you would. I mean, if you want to run it as a kind of a delayed rush, I could see running rivers for a couple turns, just compensate for that card advantage, keep landing characters on the board, and save one power of faith for, you know, an all-out turn to just slam home the win.
That's a really good idea, especially, and this will come up again in a couple decks, but that Knight of the North with Noble Melisandre is going to be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
One challenge, a 4 or 5 power swing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He definitely looked like something Braytheon would be interested in. I can't believe at the time that I didn't think about comboing him with that Mel.
That Mel is the new Mel, the recursion Mel,
mm-hmm.
should be really good. But like much like the Viper that adds gold to him when you lose a challenge, the unopposed Mel is so goddamn good. It's, you just have to have a fantastic reason not to run her.
Yeah, you definitely need to be building for whatever the other strength is of the other version.
All right, on to Stark. The very first Stark, since we just talked about it, let's talk Knights. What do you guys think of it?
I really dig it. I've had a Stark Knights deck that I've been playing off and on in casual stuff for a few months now, and I think it is really resilient. Now, I admit that I have not tweaked it after the FAQ 5.0 update, so I'm going to have to make a tough decision between Mira and Preston, and I think I will probably keep Mira for that blanking.
It gets worse. What about Narrow Escape?
I actually was not even playing Narrow Escape. I was playing Mira for mine, and still felt it surprisingly resilient.
Yeah.
You can draw a bunch, crap out a bunch of characters.
Yeah, that's the thing. The draw from Jamie and then being able to drop him back into shadows after he dies with that Kingsguard plot, you know, I didn't really feel like I was missing out not having Narrow Escape.
But you miss the look on people's face when you play it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Narrow Escape is a real deflator almost as much as whenever you play Counterplot against someone. we can get into that later, but let me talk about Stark Knights. Now, I feel that there's a couple of ways to build Stark Knights, and for it to be very effective, obviously playing it with the Kingsguard can be very good. All the Kingsguard are awesome. Jamie's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all great, especially paired with Mira. But I think something is to still be said for just the plain Jane Knight murder that comes out of it, where you're running, like, Bear Island, and you obviously have Mira there, and maybe Shadows Aria. And so you're just nailing guys and just getting your murder on every turn, rock and roll. So there's a couple of ways to build it. It probably is Stark's best, maybe. I don't know. I still like Stark Wildling, and honestly, I'm having fun with Stark No Agenda right now.
I think those are the two best. I like Stark Knights a lot, and I didn't. The very first time I played it was at a store championship, which was fairly effective, but it doesn't run the armies. It doesn't run the big strength guys. So the second you run into anything that's really burny,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have an answer that's not, you know, cry yourself to sleep that night.
Well, at least the way that I've always had them, I've always had some immune to event tech in there. You know, like right now I'm big on like the Crown of Winter.
Obviously, yeah,
it's going to get stronger with that out. It's going to turn off any summer effects, which really aren't relevant right now. But I'm big on that. I always put Riders of the Red Fork, even though they're not knights or anything, because I love those guys. So, I mean, you've got ways, but you're right.
Crown did just get a lot weaker with Viserion, though. Or Viserys, sorry.
Sure.
The best
burn. You're right.
The top tier burn won't be playing solely event burn, because look around Stark and Martell, and there's so much, so many characters, so much, even Baratheon, I guess, that's just like immune to events and don't give a shit about your event burn. If you're playing burn and you're just like events, you're gonna flame out.
Yeah. No pun intended.
I mean, that's, I think, partly why I kind of like the Kingsguard stuff, and getting some of the no attachments in there. And, of course, being in Stark with Frozen Solid and Mira can help you out against some of the location-based stuff. I think that gives you kind of a multi-pronged way to try and deal with some of those options.
Ooh. A lot of good ways. Stark Knights is very strong, so...
It'll always be a good deck as long as knights don't get too popular. Knights is the self-policing agenda.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Stark No Agenda.
Yeah, you said you've been digging it lately.
Right now, I'm playing Stark No Agenda Winter in particular. Now, I didn't know that you and Darknage built one. I'm not sure if ours are similar. I'm not running Mage Mormont, which I feel like I probably should, but honestly, it's really not much of a factor. But I'm doing some winter stuff, and I'm even playing, because we don't have a lot of dissension rolling around over here at the moment, or, you know, no Varys, really. You're always going to have Okhart, but I'm running Ranger of the North, I think is what he's called, or Ranger of Winter. Maybe it's Ranger of Winter. Ranger, I can't remember, but anyways.
So hard for that card.
Yeah, not kneeling to defend. I mean, he's huge. Shadows Arya, obviously Mira. That's the focal point, really. Obviously, all the cool murder events. And it's been going really well. A lot of location blank. I'm even running Freezing Rain. Now, I first built the deck just because I just wanted to have fun. And Freezing Rain's probably going to end up getting cut. But who knows? Because it does come in handy against Old Way whenever you're trying to blank everything. So not just Maiden's Bane. Maybe we also need to blank Longship Iron Victory permanently with some of those attachments. So it's been a blast. I think it's one of Stark's best builds. Now, maybe not my particular version, but for sure, it's a great way to go.
This stupid deck is about as stressful to play as Bloodthirst. To claim, I wanted to go on this rant forever, but to claim is a complete trap right now. Most decks are either running rivers or so much draw that they don't feel they need rivers. Once you're running that much draw, you need to claim Intrigue, you need to claim Military, and you're like, I just drew three more cards this turn. I'll make it work. And it no longer matters nearly as much. No Agenda Winter has Toolbox, better than almost anything in the game. And its Toolbox isn't something another deck can match, because someone by the Conclave grabs Mira. Someone by the Conclave grabs Alaris. It grabs almost anything you need. But the few things that it can't grab for characters, it grabs with Mage, or it grabs the Kindly Man. The opponent's playing the Viper's Bannerman, you grab the Kindly, kill the Kindly, and then sit there and take your Bannerman upgrade. If they grab the Viper, you Mage into Frozen... what the hell is that card?
Frozen Solid? Oh, nope. No. Frozen Outpost.
Nope, Frozen Moat.
Oh, Frozen Moat. Frozen Moat. Ah, Viper, I get you.
And then just... But you have so much, like, little toolboxing from that one Summoned by the Conclave, and then every other plot, which is... Plots are toolboxing. No one really looks at them that way, but they are. So you run the right toolbox plot for whatever situation, and you play around it. If you trust your skill, the deck is disgusting and exhausting.
Right.
The last Stark deck we're going to talk about is Wildlings. The only thing I know I like in this deck is Nightmares, but apparently Daryl's been playing it, so take it away.
I have been playing Stark Wildlings quite a bit. It's been a while since I played it, but I was definitely playing it for a while there. And it's still built. my variant, I've always been a Timmy. Always. I like the big effects. I am wowed and distracted by fun cards. So what I did, and this I wouldn't recommend you building your Stark Wildling deck this way, but I will just say it for the heck of it, is you play King's Pavilion. All standing characters get +3 strength, and then all your Wildlings have stealth, and so then you hopefully go first. You're running high initiative plots, and you stealth past all their guys, and then you breaching the wall them, and you kill all their dudes. I've done that. I've pulled that combo off more than a few times. It's been a blast, but even if you're not even doing that build, you've got a ton of strength on the board. So you've got all the great things about Stark with, like, Frozen Outpost to stand your defenders who are already huge, who all have stealth. You've got my particular version runs Jane Westerling to search out a king who could be Mance Raider. It could be Rob, and also runs Widow's Watch. So Widow's Watch to get dupes of Mance Raider or Rob or Knights of the Red Fork. That's just my particular build. But any way you spell it, all the great kill effects that come out of Stark, now you've got a ton of strength as well as stealth. So definitely, definitely one of the best builds for Stark still. I think that the meta has now skewed a little bit. Like, getting up to 21 power is not as easy as it was a couple of years ago. but still a good build. I don't think it's better than Knights. Not sure if it's better than No Agenda, really. They feel about on the same level there, but definitely a dominant deck you can put together fairly easily as well.
Yeah, I would say from playing against it, one of the most frustrating things, and thus one of the better things about the Wildlings, is how hard it can be to push through my challenges against it with the armies standing from the frozen location that I always lose track of, you know, because there's so many frozen start cards. Which one is it?
Frozen Outpost.
Thank you. It just gets really frustrating. It uses that card, I think, to the best use out of any Stark deck.
Absolutely. And in mine, again, I'm a Timmy playing. I love fun things. So I also put in a copy of Massey's Hook. So then your King's Pavilion can give you that 3 strength buff. So you've Massey's Hooked your guy to stand him while he's defending or attacking, and you've gone +3. Obviously, that can turn against you whenever someone's not kneeling to attack you or your opponent's doing something like that, but I found it to still be worth it out of Stark Wildlings because you've got a shitload of dudes, and they're all gigantic.
There's a card that's an answer for that, and not even a kill card. Northling Keep is glorious with that. Like, it's just like, oh, well, you have 15 strength on your one pain-in-the-ass guy. I'm just going to nail Northland Keep and not pay attention to you anymore.
And remove him.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I haven't even thought about putting that in.
Even better, if you want to speed up the deck, when you attack and they defend with one guy, you frozen outpost their defender, and then you Northland Keep to remove that defender from the challenge.
Hmm.
On a book, I never thought all about day. That.
Nice.
Yeah.
I had not thought about that combo.
That's a sweet combo. I like that.
Being mean is fun. I actually stole that from Robbie Stark, but, you know, he hates me anyway, so whatever.
Nice. No, that's good stuff. So, but, yeah. Oh, man, I love Wildlings so much.
All right. On to Greyjoy, I guess?
I think so.
So, while I was... Well, let's try not to curse, right? That's our new thing. While I was screwing around with Greyjoy, I hate Song of Ice. Song of Ice is like one of my least favorite decks in the game because I was wrong about it. I thought it would change the entire meta. I thought it was going to be so powerful. Song of Ice is kind of bullshit. Most people that play Song of Ice kind of suck. I've played Song of Ice at least 30 or 40 times. I've lost maybe once. I mean, I've definitely lost once. Top decking a Raven with no hand is a bitch. But there's no fear in me in Song of Ice. But I think I, like, screwing around, figured out how Song of Ice might work.
Okay, tell us more.
Okay. Song of Ice is usually a trap. I don't know if this works. This is my disclaimer. But at the very least, First Snow of Winter works way too well with Song of Ice for anyone who's playing Song of Ice not to run it. In addition, if you want it to be Winter, Wintertime Marauders are one of the best cards in the game, right?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
So you want to be able to get unopposed and clear opponent shit out. The idea is that they have very small hands because of Song of Ice. You're probably going to be running Maiden Bane is restricted. But if you want to have a clear board and you want to be able to claim unopposed, Enraged Crewmen are huge, Orcmont Reaver can be huge, and the new Longship Iron Victory can be really huge. Because who's defending with that sitting there? You're really going to defend with your Viper's Bannerman with Orcmont Reaver with Iron Victory sitting on the board?
Depends how bad I want those two cards, I guess.
Well, okay. Mm-hmm. But it's Greyjoy, so they're going to cancel your two cards. But let's make it worse. Once we've established that, like, we're going to make it hurt if you defend, we add things to make it worse when you defend. So, like, besides Wintertime Marauders, we've got Hammerhorn Raiders for the extra claim, Scouting Vessels, so you have to defend with two, and they can't make it summer, because Song of Fire is terrible.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So, Winter Armada. Do you remember Winter Armada?
Yeah, two costs, plus four strength and renown, right?
Plus four strength and renown. Add Winter Armada to Enraged Crewman and a little bit of renown. Say something that might stand your characters when they have when you get an unopposed challenge.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad deck. It's aggro rush.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed kind of the Greyjoy unopposed rush, and so having another direction to try and take that definitely intrigues me.
This is not So if this sucks, sorry.
Yeah, I have Song of Ice built right now, and it's like ultra aggro that runs like Hammerhorn Raiders and like Victarion, and like you're just trying to get a million claim, as well as, you know, you're trying to destroy their hand through intrigue, which Greyjoy has a surprising amount right now compared to what they used to, but it's still not quite there. Song of Ice is pretty decent, at least for keeping the game close and decks that like to draw a million cards. I'm still not finding it to be quite there. It's definitely a better option than Song of Fire.
Hey, I'm gonna be a hypocrite. What's if you win an unopposed challenge, that character claims a power card?
The follower of two gods or whatever.
There's a great character, and like six people are screaming at their
radio. Oh, you mean the three cost raider that has stealth, and if he wins, he claims a power. Okay.
Yeah. I'll find the.
I'm just gonna, you know, add to the fire of people screaming at the podcast right now.
I so do that. I'm like, but when you do the smart telecards, I lose my shit.
No, yeah.
God forbid I don't telecard. Iron Fleet Captain.
Oh, awesome! That's just what I was thinking in my head. If I'd gotten it out of my mouth 30 seconds sooner.
I am Fleet Captain, for plus four you get, everything is unopposed, the extra renown from that plus four location, and then all the extra aggro if you do defend. That's a mean little bitch. Fair enough. You know what I don't like, everyone likes? I don't like choke.
Oh, I mean, I hate it as a concept, but
as an effective deck building technique, I just don't think it's good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of wind up in the trap of trying to choke just 100%, you know, the other person's counting no gold and can do nothing. And you wind up just devoting so much deck space and time and effort to that, that you're not doing anything else.
You win if you get lucky and draw right. At the end of the day, like, if I sit down at a table with a neutral deck against 85% of the people who play this game, I'm fairly confident that I'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's like you, and then like they look at me, but you got your combos to go off. It's like, yeah, I don't have magic tricks to make combos go off. I built in enough combos that would work. That's not how the game works. All good players, this game is so hugely variant. All good players build with variance in mind. It's mitigating variance that separates a lot.
I would agree with that.
All right, speaking of mitigating variants, let's do Greyjoy Black Sails. What are you guys running restricted?
In the one that I have together right now for my girlfriend Kristen, it's definitely Fury, so that she can use to be a Kraken ASAP.
When you can search to be a Kraken, opponents just want to die. And if you're, you know, playing in the current meta, what's the Greyjoy 8-strength army?
King Balon's Host.
King Balon's Host. If you can stand King Balon's Host, oh my god. Have you ever done that to somebody?
I have not myself, no.
Oh, like, you get a Martell player with, like, a Lost Oasis, and they're all happy. They're like, yeah, Balon's Host is knelt. You need to get through that power count. And you're like, by the way, I'm going to cancel that Lost Oasis. And in the process, stand King Balon's Host, so all that renown doesn't matter either.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit, living the dream.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Epic.
It's funny you bring up Black Sails in regards to this whole variants thing, because the whole concept, I just find it really interesting from a kind of a technical standpoint. At the beginning of the game, you know, when you have to split into hold and deck, you are drastically increasing variants. And then the agenda for the rest of the gameplay, you are drastically reducing it. But that initial variance, I've seen really, really mess with people. I've seen Kristen be really pissed whenever whatever it is that she needs is just not in the hold. And she's not going to go get it. Or, you know, because she can't.
But the deck is so small, if you ran two of them and the other one's in the hold, it's very likely you see it. Unfortunately, know yourself as a player. Like, I've forever thought, like, I've always been a monster with control. And then I was like, oh my god, I'm so good with Rush too, and I can't play aggro to save my life. But what I am, and what eventually it came to, is I'm a tempo player. I want to maintain a tempo over a number of plots. I don't want to rush to win. I want to be a little bit more conservative when I'm trying to get that last couple power. Black Sails discourages that. Because if you didn't have that naval icon for the last few cards, you just decked yourself. Black Sails is if you're an aggressive player who knows exactly what they want. And they exist. Like, Dennis, everyone's favorite, is phenomenal with Black Sails because he's extraordinarily decisive and goes for the throat almost always. That kind of player for Black Sails is a godsend. But if you want a tempo, if you want to leverage your control, sooner or later, unless you're running a lot of renown or extra things, you run out of ways to stop things. Cancel and extra control are what people throw into those decks. Cancel and saves are, at best, card equality, not card disadvantage. That's not necessarily a positive. Even things like Iron Mines that everyone runs, I'm less and less enamored with it. Unless you're running one key character that you absolutely need, it's almost better to just be able to cycle your characters and be like, you know, that character died, let's play another good one. There's so many good cards in this game that being able to cancel the bad thing that happened to one, that one that's not the Red Viper, that one that's not King Balon's Host, and that one who's not necessarily winning you the game just by his mere presence, is a problem. Like, if you're running cancel and save, make sure to do as much as possible to make sure it's repeatable.
I mean, repeatable is great, but even in defense of, say, something like Iron Mines, which is card neutral at best, is not resource neutral. And if you're, you know, keeping even something that's not as important, but maybe on the more expensive end, say a fleet or something on the board, with your zero cost card, and it's something you spent 4, 5, 6, 7 gold or whatever on, you're still coming up with a resource advantage there. Where if you're just planning on cycling the characters, there's a constant gold expenditure there.
Completely true, and especially true when you have a bunch of renown on a character. But you have a bunch of renown on a character, and that character is very important to you. You painted a target on your back.
Mm-hmm.
And if you paint a target on your back to... I'm sick of using the same three examples. If you paint a target on your back to Ben, if you paint a target on your back to Bavin, Stroms, they're going to find a way to hit that target. Like, even if you're just, even if it's resource intensive, the best decks right now, and in 3 weeks this can change, and Harrenhal is going to destroy the meta. But in 3 weeks this might change. The best decks right now are good card decks. Here's my 60 best cards with a lot of resources so you can never stop me from playing them. Resource neutral is a pain in the ass until you realize everyone's like, you know what? F resources, choke's a thing, so I'm going to over-resource just a little bit just in case. And then it becomes cheap. Like, you're trying to tech for something that is true before we had, like, those extra six good cards for that deck. Sorry. Next?
That's okay. I think we should go ahead and move on to your next one, because I think you'll really enjoy talking about that swim with me here to listen.
Well, I guess we're on to the old way. Longship Willsbane.
Indeed. We can't all be perfect.
The old way... no, go ahead. I'll let you say your piece on it, Aaron. Go ahead.
It's so quick. The old way, or Longship Willsbane at the very least, is a lesson in that one deck can completely change the value of a card. Because no other deck should be playing Maiden's Bane as a Richard.
You're absolutely right.
Indeed.
You're absolutely right. And I personally think Old Way may be Greyjoy's best deck right now. And maybe that's just because I'm playing against Brett's version of it right now a lot. Not looking forward to going over to his house tomorrow and playing against it. I mean, it's been really good. Obviously, if you control Maiden's Bane, you have a higher chance for success, but I mean, that's not the only card that this deck runs, obviously. It runs a lot of other good stuff, a lot of great cancels, a lot of great warships that don't need Maiden's Bane to work, obviously. You know, you have Longship Iron Victory, Captured Cogs, arguably the most broken card in the game. No, maybe not Captured Cog, but you know, Naval Escort. Naval Escort's a great card. Do what?
It's Captured Cog is a fantastic card. New players always underestimate Dominance.
I love that card. I love it.
It's one of my favorites.
It's such a blast too, and it works really well with Naval Escort. I mean, I think he's also running. Oh God, we just talked about today. Scouting vessels, you know, and just things like that. Like, it's a good deck. Like, Greyjoy has always been really good. They don't have a lot of allies. They don't have a lot of negative traits. All their cards are really quality. If you're not running Shadows, the Boat Swains are gonna bend you over. which, luckily, we've got King's Guard around, so there's a lot more of it floating around. But they've just got really quality guys. They're all the good brothers are surprisingly annoying. Minus the Bannerman one. They're all Bannerman, but you know what I mean. The Banner Effect one, the discard a card from your hand to do something. Neil Locations, I think.
Yeah, I actually like that one quite a bit.
Right, I haven't played against that one a lot, but you know what? There's probably some good utility in it, even in that deck. So
there is, but I mean, cannot be discarded is hugely annoying in that deck. Because they're almost always going to be able to keep the Naval Escorts on the board with him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, and not to mention there's the good brother that saves locations. So even if you have a way to deal with Maiden's Bane, it could definitely be saved unless you're running some Frozen Solids, you know, things like that. Like, that's actually a great counter for it is Frozen Solid.
No, everyone who's running it, the better players who are running it are running the river that chooses a card you control at the top of your deck.
Yeah, you can do that, or in a pinch, I've seen Zyler knock it off with his own newly made Lord so that he could replay a dupe that didn't have my Frozen Solid anymore.
There you go.
The deck has an answer for anything, except...
Yeah, it does. Those decks are also going to run Iron Lord to bring it back and things like that. So, It's not easy. So right now, I honestly think it's Greyjoy's best deck. I think that all of Greyjoy's cards that are good, that you think, like, hey, this is great in this deck, can work in this Old Way deck. Now, it's not going to be Choke, but I think it's better than Choke. Like, Choke's good and all. I still like Choke as a Greyjoy deck type, but I think the Old Way is, it's just potent. It really is. Even if you can spit out guys, I mean, you're just losing a war of attrition at that point. Just boom, boom, boom. You're killing your guys. So, and they're not losing intrigue challenges and stuff. Like, come on. I Gaston Grey has proven to be a pretty good counter to return that bitch to hand. But even then, I mean, it's still tough. No one runs Gaston Grey really anymore.
Oh. Some Quentins do, Mike Quentin does. But the Old Way is a lesson in meta calls. Because the Old Way is one of the two or three strongest decks in the game right now. But it won't win a big turn. There are three plots that will completely handle it. Attack from the Sea, Dry Season, and Burning Bridges. If you run one of those three, you have a decent shot of beating that. If you run two, you'll probably beat it. If you run Stark, which is a very hard counter to it, thank you, Mira. Thank you, Frozen Solid, Nightmares, whatever else. You have a fairly good shot. Now, add all those together.
Maybe this drinking was not a great idea, Aaron.
Who's that guy from South Park who's like,
I don't know.
I don't know. Robin's been playing that Stick of Truth game, and I can't remember that kid's name, but you just did that impression.
I run one very solid counter to the Old Way in my plot deck.
What's that?
I assume that Stark Winter is a thing that exists right now, and Stark Winter handles the Old Way.
It does a decent job.
I would say so.
I will take my chances in the metagame of running into it or not, and if I run into it, then I don't win that tournament. You're going to run that chance with anything. But your odds of playing the Old Way and hitting that Stark deck, or hitting me that has that one counter and it might be better, or hitting Garknodge, who just ran it, who might just be better, are enough that I don't have to stress this deck. And remember this, in 6 months, that's how the meta works. In 6 months, everyone will have moved on for the counters from the Old Way. Everyone will be like, the Old Way's not good anymore, whatever. And no one will play them, and then all of a sudden, you'll get like 4 or 5 Old Way wins in a row, and everyone will be like, what the fuck, that deck wasn't any good? Like, why are people winning with it? And it's like, you stop playing the counters, stupid.
Well, I think that the Old Way is kind of like Choke. Like, Choke is a proven decent deck. And I think the Old Way could be along the same lines. Like, it's going to be proven to be really good. I mean, it's higher than decent right now, for sure. But yeah, as time passes, it'll be in the back of people's heads like, man, that's a good deck. But they'll be playing something else. And then all of a sudden it'll come in and it'll totally drop a sausage on your face. So.
It's a New Year
medicine. So, like, yeah, right now, man, that deck is annoying as balls, for sure. But, you know, come regional season, I've even thought about it. Right now, I'm not running, like, Fling to the Wall. I should probably run that. That would help mitigate a little bit of that. But, I mean, those Old Way decks, you know, they can, if they have their draw rolling for them, they could just fill it all back up. So,
want to hear something cool? Okay, 5 plots that will handle half the current meta, and I'm saying this on purpose because nothing I do is by accident. Fear of Winter, Fleeing to the Wall, First Snow of Winter, Rule by Decree, and Art of Seduction.
There we go.
3/4 of the current meta just loses. Like,
play,
automatically,
them all. Sit down.
Automatically, huh?
Think about it. What top decks handle Fear of Winter not expecting? And those that are expecting it, which handle Art of Seduction? And then your 6th plot, Forgotten, and 7th Valar.
I mean, those are great plots.
Well,
sure.
And it's not they're it's not that they're unbeatable or that they're so fancy. It's that the current meta is I want to draw as many cards as possible and shit things out onto the board and make you deal with
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's those, why I still run Rallycry.
God, yeah. I want to run Rallycry.
You have no idea. You got me with it just the other night.
Yep, I got Brett with it before that, just against his Maiden's Bane deck. But I mean, I still lost that game. But it was well fought. I mean, Rallycry is ridiculous. Like I even run it in a deck where I draw a ton of cards, but there's always that chance where I would rather get rid of like a Moneylender or something garbage. And, you know, and risk that chance than being down and having the chance to swing way up by hitting something important to them.
Hey, my change the meta prayer, start running Battle for Shield Islands.
man, you know, I've been looking at that card.
Like, just play it and be like, yeah, I'm going second, so suck it. I'm going to take your location. Deal with it.
Yeah, so, Old Way, there you go.
We are on Lannister, the Tunnels of the Red Keep. The Tunnels of the Red Keep, you store in Pyromancer's cache as a matter of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Tunnels of the Red Keep want to just swim through a river right now. They've never needed the control that those plots offer. They've got little, like, gold weenies that you can't possibly get through. They've got murder effects that are just like an intrigue from winning something with a one strength intrigue guy. There's almost, if you're not, like, much like the Old Way, if you're not ready for tunnels, tunnels eats your lunch and then sends you home crying.
Yeah, there's a good tunnels deck rolling around down here. Most certainly, like, the most deflating feeling in the world is coming in with, like, a Targ burn deck, and then they're running tunnels, and you see that, and you're just like, ah, son of a bitch. Why me?
Yeah, I mean, the strength boost is just crazy.
Right. I mean, it's definitely one of those reasons why I've been playing a lot more First Snow Winter, for sure.
Yep.
And I mean, and I'm also bringing back Rule by Decree. I say bringing it back. I mean, it's always been really decent, but it has been getting cut a lot from plot decks. And so there's nothing wrong with a little Fear Winner. Next turn, Rule by Decree on a punk-ass bitch who's running Lanny Tunnels. But not always enough, that's for sure. But Tunnels is a really... I kind of put it there with Greyjoy Choke. Is that... It's always there in somebody in the back of your head that's like, man, this is a solid deck. Like, when in doubt, like, say you had to just wake up and go to a tournament the next day, and, you know, you didn't have a lot of time to plan. Tunnels is a great, great deck to put together. You know, just like pretty much any Lannister deck, really. But Tunnels can, you can get a lot of good mileage out of Tunnels, especially you get some light control with the Alchemist Guildhall. I mean, even that, I mean, you're probably running a couple of Neil effects already, so.
I like the Guild Hall a lot, and one thing that a lot of people forget about is that it can actually Neil locations as well, and it actually provides some nice tech against the deck we were just talking about a little bit ago, the Old Way.
Yeah.
And burn. And, like, anything burning that you might not be, like, even if they get rid of your tunnels. They're like, I'm going to burn you to death. And you're like, by the way, your big impulse location? Nah, not so much.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Tunnels, good deck. I like that. All right. What's next on your list?
No agenda.
Mm.
The key to no agenda is a weenie. The campfire mine.
She just does so much.
A house divided.
I do love me some campfire mines.
Yeah, she just gets more and more versatile as the game goes on, and I love it.
The campfire mine will heat. It turns off your Tommen, so, you know, be prepared to cry about your Tommen sometimes. But it turns on your House Divide. It turns on your Wildlings. It turns on your Gold Cloaks. It turns on your Kingsguard. The only thing that shuts off is Tommen and that one little weenie that's out. Let them waste their dissension on your stupid weenie that you had no interest in surviving to begin with. Such a great card.
Yeah. Now, I don't run Campfire Mimes in my new agenda deck, but I could see that. But the Campfire Mime I did run in my Wildling deck, and it was money, money, money. And I still love Lannister Wildlings. I have not rebuilt it in a while. Like I said, I don't know if the game is quite tweaked where it was before, where you could afford to try to get to 21 power. But still a super powerful deck. But no agenda. Oh, man. Those Clegane Brigands. I hate to be the guy that said I told you so, but I did. Amazing. Amazing. And no agenda is a blast. I mean, very few times does it come up where somebody still is playing those seven cost armies, but it does happen from time to time. And it's nice to pull those in an intrigue challenge and be like, ah, so you couldn't play those guys because there's no chance in hell that deck you built is going to produce seven gold. And now those guys are useless. So anytime you can create a dead card, you're living the dream.
So let's ask about a couple specific cards, because there's two cards that I really think might go in line with no agenda. One makes it not no agenda.
Okay.
That you guys rated, and I'm curious about what has changed, if anything has changed, that you wanted to test. What about Sir Robert Strong?
I like Sir Robert Strong. I played a Lannister Kingsguard, and that's the Realm deck, over the weekend, which is still my Worlds build that I've been tweaking here and there. And I really thought Robert Strong paid off. I'm willing to even eat the dead turn of my own characters when they come into play, Nelt, because I'm able to keep backing that up with more Neil to Neil their old stuff from the turn before, and their new stuff comes into play now. So they're always still that turn behind as we rotate through that little delay. And I think I played that against you, Daryl, right? With the with the Greyjoy Winter, right? And you had you had basically the whole setup with the Marauders and everything.
There you go.
But couldn't get it through that. And I really dug him.
Yeah. I think that Sir Robert Strong is still just as fantastic as we had previously thought. But you have to make sure that you're in a position where you're already kind of ahead. You've got a little bit of removal in there. Because obviously if they're spitting out like 10 dudes, well, that's probably not going to do much good. But in the late game, after some removal has taken place, things like that, like, obviously we still like Robert Strong. What do you think about Robert Strong, Aaron?
I like Robert Strong an awful lot. I think that he can lose you a game as easily as win you a game. I think that Will should play Robert Strong. I think that John Smith might want to not do that yet.
Yeah.
Robert Strong would lose more games than he'd win.
Right. So he can be a double-edged sword. One thing that we've done that I think some people may not be thinking of all the time is to, like, on turns where you may be down or something, hopefully you've been using your Preston Greenfield the right way, and you just pop your Robert Strong back into shadows.
Yeah, I think you really need Preston there as backup. Robert out of the way when you need him out of the way. Okay, so the next one Aaron had here was Power Behind the Throne, which I still think is a really, really fun sort of deck. I've played mainly the super rushy version of it, though a lot of folks have had some success with kind of a more delayed control version that's really working on the attrition of that extra intrigue challenge. You know, I'm kind of torn right now. We just got a couple cards that in the meta back in the fall that can really hose the Maester heavy Conclave version that I like, i.e. Cold Hands by Mr. Brett Zeiler and Ygritte. But right now, I'm not seeing Ygritte around anywhere. Cold Hands for sure. But Lanny does also have the best answer to them in the Iron Throne. So it's tough. It kind of makes it an arms race who's going to get which first. I think in most decks, your opponent's probably only playing one copy of Cold Hands and possibly one copy of Ygritte, if that. And you can very easily go up to three of the Iron Thrones, and those the Rush version of the deck sets up very well with all the gold weenies and different things. So I think you've got decent odds on getting down into it in time.
Yeah, no matter how you spell it, an extra intrigue challenge is huge. I think that I don't think the power behind the throne ever really has becomes bad, if you will, or whatever. I think it's just not always as appealing, not just as far as creative ideas come. I just think that people don't enjoy playing it as much as they do these other decks, but like it's great. Anytime you're working with a deck that is built on decimating someone's hand, which those are the versions of Power Behind the Throne that I build. Some people, like you and Kyle, build, which arguably the better version is the Rush version. But anytime you're doing that, you have to make sure that you're being effective in decimating their hand. Obviously, rivers have made that harder. Well, crossing the Mummers forward has single-handedly made that harder. Just the amount of draw, in Thrones as a whole has made that harder, and there's just more draw coming down the pipe. But I still think it's really good. Fear Winter is always a bitch. I mean, two intrigue challenges can just wreck someone's day. So I love Power Behind the Throne. It's really good. I don't play it very much, even though I love it, mainly because I play with my friends and I don't want to piss everybody off by discarding every card out of their hand turn one.
Yeah, I was going to echo that. The Fear of Winter play out of it made it really strong if you were going that direction in the Bloodthirst heavy meta. It could just wreck a Bloodthirst deck's game turn one, you know, because they don't want stuff on the board. They want to sit back and craft that hand. And when they can only stop one of those challenges, possibly, as long as they have that burning in hand right off the bat, that could cause some problems. I definitely played that matchup with Kyle several times when he was down for our store championship. Well, actually, we didn't play in the tournament, but aside from the tournament, we probably played half a dozen games. And that hurt a lot with Bloodthirst looking less popular right now. That kind of makes Power Behind the Throne look with Fear Winter look a little less tasty.
So, much like the old way, if people are teching for this deck, they can beat it. In most houses, if you're ready to face something, you can handle it. Have you have a throne like the old way is the deck you want to play when no one thinks that's the deck you want to play. So be ready. Read the meta better.
So what else is next here?
The mean decks. The burn decks.
Ooh, that hurts.
Whenever you're going to play at a major tournament, if you didn't account for burn, you're going to regret it.
I agree. That is always the thing. Every time I go to a tournament, that's always one of the main things that I'm worrying about. But that may have something to do with my proclivity for Lannister, which is historically quite weak to burn, aside now from tunnels.
Let's start with Summerburn, because I just started about Summerburn all day, so why not? Let's talk Cryptid in Summerbird. What would you guys run?
That's tough. That's tough, man.
I got at least 4 fixes, so I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like I might want to try it out with the Red Keep. But that means for going the Hatchling's Feast, which is one of the main reasons to run the bigger influence. Gosh. That's a tough one. But if you're going summer, you're not having that instant gratification on the influence you would from Knights of the Hollow Hill. So that's what makes me tentatively lean towards the Keep.
See, I probably go Long Lances.
That's what I go.
That was my other thought as well.
But at the end of the day, I think this is why Summerburn is great. But in the bigger tournaments, in the X goes to Stalic, in the Gen Cons, in the big ones, I think that's why Summerburn loses. Because there's not a path. There's options, but there's not a best option. There's just ways.
Well, I think the biggest thing wrong with Summerburn right now is the prevalence of winter. Now, I'm not saying that everyone's playing winter out there. We're playing a little more winter here. But at a tournament, I feel like you're 70% more likely to run into a winter deck than you are a summer deck. There's not a lot of good summer tech out there. And now, with Song of Ice, making the ability to make it summer impossible unless you're running Song of Fire, there's no contest. Why would you even take that risk? You know, with a summer deck, I would obviously, like, you want to run Kings of Summer, or, you know, at least you're going to have, like, Field of Fire in there and things like that. So for Field of Fire to not become a dead card for you, you're going to need to run Song of Fire. And Song of Fire is not really good. I mean, there's not a lot of times that those decks even draw cap. On average, if you're doing everything right, you're probably drawing two extra cards a turn. Unless you're building it the way that, like, Ben Terpstra builds them, where he is definitely drawing 3 cards every turn with, like, Magi's Crone and stuff. So,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That's my killer card, because I swear to God I found that card and Bruno talked me out of it. But, John, I love you. Building season plus Lady Daenerys' Chambers means that if you want to be summer, it's summer. So in Targ, and look, I said this earlier, but Song of Ice is a trap. It's not a real thing. If you won with it, congratulations. I went to 9 or 10 SCs when, like, Song of Ice should have been the best equipped, and I beat it every time but once. I just don't believe it's a really good deck, unless you're specifically attacking for it with magic that I just made up off the top of my head. So, mind you, I'm pretty sure the things I said off the top of my head were bullshit. I just think you're meant to that. I don't believe in Song of Ice. I believe in Kings of Winter, but if you're playing Lady of the Nurse's Chambers and you didn't get choked to death, the opponent has no chance of keeping it with you. In Martell, it makes me, like, have agita, like, where I shake about it. But in Targaryen, what do you do if you can assume it's going to be summer? But, like, you're probably going to be running the Lost Message. You're probably going to be running Building Season and League Nearest as Chambers. That means, short of Song of Ice, you've got control of the season game, right?
Yeah, unless someone can squeak through a carrion bird to shuffle instead of discard, which could prove an issue. I mean, gives a potential edge to tunnels, which will be boosting the bird so that it's not easily burnt. But leaves some other decks out in the cold with the one strength bird.
I just think Targ Summer's not really a good deck right now. I really don't think so. I think that it runs good cards that other Targaryen decks would run. And I guess if you're trying to run it out of Kings of Summer, then yeah, that extra draw rules. But really, I just don't think it's there, man. I think that there's a lot better options to go out of Targaryen right now.
Weirdly, I completely agree.
Weirdly.
Wow, that is throwing me for a loop here.
No, I've spent a few days being argued at the Targ Summer. Like, even Alex and Bruno were like, oh my god, Targ Summer is going to just be a contender. You just solved it. And
yeah, well, hey, man, if those guys can pull it off, hey, more power to them. You know, I mean, if anybody can, it would be John Bruno.
Yeah. Like,
you fight through that uphill battle once or twice. When you have to fight through an uphill battle every game, the idea of being good is to be at an even playing field with other good players and be like, you know what, I'll stare you down and I'll figure out a way to beat. When you're fighting uphill against other good players, it's an entirely different situation. And I think that's what Targ Summer causes. You have to fight uphill against other good players.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would never really want to completely rule this out because I think, as far as summer cards go, Targ has the strongest options there.
Definitely.
Fire is always fun. Yeah.
Don't forget about Slaver's Bay. Like, that's still a good card. If you're running summer, that's a great card for you.
Yeah, the army that stands after you
Fairweather Flowers. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The and just the card advantage of that draw. As long as it is going, I mean, that's the thing that the Targ has historically been behind on, and filling that hole is always something to look at for them.
Yeah,
sure, but a step below, agreed. But when you're a good player and you're going to face another good player, you don't meta for the entire group. I can, with Targ Summer, be player X, who I've never heard of. Almost always, just as a matter of course, I'll just beat that player. And I think it might sound arrogant, but it's just true. Like, player X isn't going to beat me 95% of the time. But I had meted for Bruno. I had meted for Dark Watch. I had meted for, honestly, you guys. You meta for people who've been around more than enough, who know enough have the answers. But when you make the answers as clear as they should be for Targ Summer, I start to get worried. I feel like they have the advantage.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
We could sit here and talk about Targ Summer forever and the what-ifs, and I think that's the biggest problem with the deck. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of there. We should move on to the sexier options that you have down here.
What you guys got? Dothraki?
I mean, that is the deck whenever Greg came back to our league night a couple weeks back. That was what got him going again. As soon as he saw that FAQ update, he was saying to us, oh my goodness, aggro is going to be big. Dothraki is a thing again. And I don't remember, how did his record wind up going that league night? Do you remember, Daryl?
I don't. Me and him were 1-1. I won 1-1.
I know he beat me, but I don't know who else he played.
I don't know how he did the rest of the night there. I think Brett beat him. Like, I think he was like 50-50, really. I mean, gotcha. And like, I've played a Dothraki deck before. I mean, there certainly are a lot of big-ass dudes.
I mean, the Swarm can just keep coming. It has some really good options to provide some of that card advantage that I was talking about for Targ, you know, the Vanguards and stuff, and getting the top five cards over and over and such. But it's just more dudes that you're getting. It's just more bodies on the ground, depending on how it goes.
Incinerate,
of course, you know. Money. What's that?
I said Incinerate's always going to be money for you.
Oh,
sure,
yeah.
Sure as hell,
I mean,
we'll have a lot of Dothraki.
It's just golden. It's golden. You won't have to name Carthine as your trait for Incinerate when you're playing Dothraki.
Yeah.
And they definitely have a boon there in not having these big reset decks rolling like they used to be. They can get a leg up and keep that pressure on.
I don't know. It's hard for me to judge like how good Dothraki is. Like, I think it's decent. I don't think it's as good as some other options out there from other houses, really. And I really don't think it's the best out of Targaryen, but it's definitely fun. I kind of put it up there with maybe like Lainey Neal type thing. Like, Lainey Neal, you can put together a Lainey Neal deck super easy, and like, it's going to be good, it's going to be competitive, like, it can get you there in a bind. Where with Dothraki, kind of the same thing. Like, you just get all the Dothraki together, you get some good cards here, maybe you get some Warcrest support, maybe you do a little more influence, do some incinerate shenanigans with maybe ambush in some attachments and things like that. Like, you could do that. It's not a super crazy or tier one deck, but it can be solid.
It's solid. It's got a really straightforward, pretty linear game plan, though. It's get those bodies on the board, and the bodies are really kind of vanilla. You know, they're big and intimidating, and they kind of multiply pretty quickly, but they don't do much else. They don't have the tricks available to them that the different builds and certainly different houses have available. So that makes it kind of brittle, you know? But they have a harder time dealing with a wide variety of things, I would think.
Well, yeah, I think the biggest thing is locations is really what we're talking about. But that's why you kind of have to have some of that Warcrest support with Price of War. But we all know that's not always the best answer. It's there. The reason he lost our game is he wasn't drawing any of his income, was a part of it. And so part of the risk of playing Dothraki is you have 5 and 6 cost dudes in your hand. Well, really 4 and 6 costs, I guess. But
all right.
Well, what are you thinking on it then, Aaron?
Oh, Daryl completely nailed that. It's a trap unless you get the right draw every time. But I guess the last Targ deck is Dragon Pit.
People have been talking about that all over the place lately.
Sure are.
I mean, I was worried about it when we rolled over to the new FAQ, and then I haven't really seen it.
We've got one down here. You've seen a little bit.
Who is
Mark?
Who is
Mark? Has one?
Did he have one? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I guess I do remember seeing him play it. He did not play it against me though. He played Greyjoy against me.
Yeah, and Dragon Pit is really great. I really like Dragon Pit. Obviously, it's better with all of the Kingsguard. It was probably at its prime before this latest FAQ. There's some ways you can tweak Dragon Pit. I don't know if the House of Dreams version is the best version. I haven't played a lot of Targaryen recently, so maybe I'm not in the norm. I know that Dragon Pit, House of Dreams, is sick. Don't get me wrong, but you know, I like a lot of other cards that that Targ has to offer, and man, I don't know. I still might play it at a Knights of the Hollow and still have Dragon Pit in there. Obviously, you've got to find ways to accelerate yourself over there, but as far as card draw goes, but we all know rivers exist. You could do that. And First Snow, you know, I hope people aren't forgetting about that wonderful synergy between First Snow and Knights of the Hollow Hill. Obviously, you've got the Red Keep restricted, but that's why you have Knights of the Hollow Hill. You know, you can play a few more influence-providing locations. Maybe you can't always blow off a Hatchling's Feast and ambush in, like, Long Lances or something like that, or whatever you're wanting to ambush in on the same turn. Maybe late game you can. I don't know, but that's really what I think is the best, and to still throw Dragon Pit in that deck. But Dragon Pit House of Dreams is still very viable. It's still great that you don't have to search out that Dragon Pit and things like that. Like, don't get me wrong, but there's still something to be said, I think, for Targ Knights of Hollow Hill.
I think it's still pretty solid, and you know, one of the things is always that little clause on there that they have to have more cards in shadows than you. They can't have an even number of shadows, which has really frustrated me a few times when I've been playing against it.
Yeah,
you know, but the blanket strength reduction really plays out. It, of course, it helps the burn, but it really helps push challenges through too. It just, in the end, doesn't seem to be getting there in the results we're seeing right now.
Right, and I think part of that just has to do with not having access to the street waif. You know, I mean, you have to choose now, and that sucks. I think it would be a lot better of a deck if you could always have that street waif in there instead of it being your
street. Well, yeah, it would, but just like all the other decks these days, you can push the river theme, and you know, at some point, drawing enough cards is definitely worth the same or better than the recursion out of your discard pile.
Yeah.
The problems for Dragon Pit, like, I play Dragon Pit a lot. I like Tarn. But the problems with Dragon Pit have been a lot of Martell and Stark. And you drop a Viper, Dragon Pit makes that really easy to get rid of, right?
Oh, yeah.
But most modern Dragon Pits aren't running any influence. So once you're not running influence, we're in a different situation. We have different problems. And Viserys answers a lot of that. Viserys is, adding Viserys immediately after they added Aegon is possibly my least favorite move FFG has made in the modern era. Like, you're going to say, we've got a permanent negative one, we've got a permanent dragon, but we've got a permanent threat, which you can completely stop if you just want to play attachments, this underplayed card type.
Right.
But the next chapter pack, here's a card that's one drop that you can play in any card deck. That's going to say, screw your attachments. We'll just kill your guy anyway.
Yeah. At prized, I believe he's one, right?
Yes.
Which is negligible, I think, most of the time. If he'd been, say, prized three or something like that, you know, then maybe we'd have a little bit of a discussion. But right now, yeah, he just drops into every Targ deck, despite what Daryl thinks.
Yeah, it's not that, that's okay.
It's not that he's so great. It's that he's so great immediately. Like, if there were no such thing as Aegon, you'd have decision to make. But if you're going to give everyone a negative one and then just run Viserys for backup just in case, it makes attachments not quite 10 link bad, but not necessarily, like, much better.
Yeah, but not particularly playable.
Yeah, and but then they keep releasing all these amazing attachments that, like, you want to play, but have you play them when they're just like, by the way, Viserys is just going to smile at you and think you're a joke, and then claim power that they're all prized for toss.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that bugs me. We keep getting all these nice new ones, the House Blades from Fire Made Flesh. We've got the house card attachments like Cal and stuff coming up, and they're all prized. With Viserys so common, that's the biggest thing that worries me, is just handing your opponent free power out of that deal.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. We obviously saw the problem with easy attachment removal from the 10 link, and we kind of gave it right back with Viserys, but the problem is the meta is not really running a lot of attachments. That's the problem. So, I mean, you may have them in your deck, but if I'm not running any attachments, well, then you've given me something to kill to gain power off of that has absolutely no effect on my deck whatsoever. There are tons of decks being made right now. I would say 80% of decks being made right now don't have a single attachment in them.
But you know what? Those... those 20% of decks, that bloodthirst deck that has cannot be touched by anything on Earth.
Yeah.
That I'm running Maesters and I have Trait Manipulation so I can toss your Raven.
Right.
those little effects for one gold as a one of, especially if you're not running an agenda. And if you're running Dothraki, if not Dragon Pit, but like Dragon Pit has to search a bit, especially if you're running Dothraki, if you're running Maesters, you'll find your Viserys. You'll be able to use him to get rid of anything. And your worst case is you didn't play a one drop.
Yeah.
I can just hold that one drop in my hand and you can discard him. I'll live.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see where the value is there, but I don't know if I'm putting him in every targ deck I build. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should, but I mean,
I think we may be in danger of just becoming a Viserys rant podcast.
Let's light him on fire or pour boiling gold on him and move on.
Yeah, definitely boiling gold. We'll crown Viserys. Well, I think that just leaves us with one house now, doesn't it?
Sure does.
The grandpappy of them all here.
A monster.
Martell.
Martell No Agenda is a beast. There's like four or five different ways to build Martell No Agenda that are as user-friendly as you can possibly make them. You can use the Viper's Bannerman. You can probably still use Burning. And if you're scared of Burn, and I'm terrified of Burn because I live in New York, the Venomous Blades are fantastic against Burn. But Martell No Agenda has tempo. It runs rivers, it can keep playing renown cards until you can't stop them, and eventually she's like, oh, crap, I guess I have enough power to win. Bye.
Yeah. I really dig the Venomous Blade at the moment, and of course it combos so nicely with Jamie. But also, you mentioning tempo makes me think of something I've really been digging in Martell lately. I've ditched, of course, the claim-raising Arianne for the plot-changing Arianne. And especially with river plots, that tempo ability to be able to swing into a Valor on an off phase a different time than they expect it, challenges, dominance, whatever that might be, and then roll around to that next turn after you've cleared the board, drop like a crossing, and load up your hand and, have claim and be able to fill up the board again on what would normally be a dead, kind of tempo turn for you has been pretty huge for me.
I mean, it doesn't just do that, and that card is going to, that's a next year ship to Martell card. But
that Arianne?
No.
Yeah. She's so good.
She's really good.
I mean, I was running her and everything, and Hardy was like, that's restricted. And it wasn't, and I was like, holy shit. But it's Bungled Orders. It's, I want to run Maesters comfortably. I want to run XYZ that's good comfortably. That's going to rely on something. She flips into the answer when they can't have had an answer ready. Because it just happened at the beginning of the challenge phase.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's lots of different times that it could be. I think I did it at the start of Taxation over the weekend.
Kiss my ass, Will.
I forget the exact situation.
Kiss my ass.
No, but like Barrick, everybody except, certain people, I guess, because I got yelled at about this, loves Barrick at least a little. Forward five position. I know you didn't think this was the turn you want to start out in plans, but so forward five position in the middle of challenges. You just lost the game.
Mm-hmm.
You're running up. Oh my god. You're running Maesters, and you did, and you ran at Whitmuel, where you killed your master, cancel my march, and congrats, you didn't have another learn crest. Cool. Arianne Valar.
She does a lot.
She's really good.
Better. I like Rush a lot. Arianne to the Spears.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the absolute, minimum that she does, she puts you a turn ahead on triggering those river plots and getting crossing into a spot where it's generating high card advantage for you. And that minimum is still really good. It's, pretty basic compared to a lot of these other things. But that's still good, too.
No, but you combo them with those other things. You're running that with Veil Ripper. You're running that with Floodwaters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just becomes plots are the most powerful effects in the game for a reason.
Yeah. And we're getting more and more ways to manipulate them. And I'll admit, that kind of worries me as well. But that's probably also a topic for a different podcast.
Yeah.
I've got a rant about that Lannister plot cycle that you would not believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll have to have you on and talk about it sometime.
I beg too much.
Well, what else does the House of the Sun bring to us here?
Conquest briefing. Martell has a crap ton of renown. Briefing has a crap ton of renown. This is a problem in individual houses, and then you add the Knight of the North and the Spy of Starfall, and then you add New Melisandre, and you clink.
Oh, yeah.
So stupidly, absurdly quickly. If you're running
it's crazy.
Like, what do you do? Have to first turn.
Martell Conquest in general, I have had good success with. I have a Martell Conquest to Lannister deck right now that is a blast. The Baratheon one, I have not tried yet, to be honest with you, which seems amazing. But any way you spell it, any time you can to the spears with anything is awesome. So you just choose those other things from those other houses that you want to add in. Mine is a little janky Conquest of Lannister, which uses Marbrand, and then you have like your armies don't kneel to attack, so kneel to attack or defend as long as you have more gold in your gold pool. So your Southron mercs get work done, especially in the late game. But anyways,
anything that adds icons.
Oh yeah, Blood Orange Grove and Green Blood Vessel.
I love Blood Vessel. That card is so underrated.
Oh, it really is. But
yeah, it's all right. I like the merchants better at the moment. But I like the merchants, the Greenblood merchants better at the moment.
Oh.
But the vessel's still fine.
Well, no, but the vessel. If you're gonna run the everyone loves Burning on the Sand, like completely. Burning on the Sand is incredible. Most Martell players run at least a couple Lost Oasis. Lost Oasis plus Spy at Starfall is Burning on the Sand. At least one.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're going to attack you, you're going to add an icon, and you're going to say bye-bye, your attack doesn't matter.
Yeah?
I mean...
And those cards are all reasonably playable on their own, so, you know, you're not just relying on getting all three set up together, so...
And then, worst case, your Viper's Bannerman is intrigued.
Still useful.
Yeah, or you run the old Ariane who has military. Or even, like, Sir Archibald has an intrigue. Intrigue on Deadly with Intrigue is awfully a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's a solid play.
It's a good card. It doesn't get much long, but it's a good card.
And handy on that, too, the Spear's turn. Of course, they always wind up wanting to let you go second, so they challenge and hopefully kneel out some stuff. And if you're just dropping extra icons onto knights like that, so you can swing back, that adds up.
Yep, definitely.
All right, let's talk about the worst thing that's ever happened to the game.
The elephant in the room here.
I know, right?
Hey, it's Bloodthirst. Alex, yeah. I'm known for as much as anything I've accomplished as for betting Dennis that Bloodthirst wasn't good. Alex, a friend of mine, built this nasty Viper version before the fact, and then after, built another that was just... It just took the biggest tournament of the season so far. I'm going to urge everyone that's listening... Bloodthirst can win any tournament you're in if you're very good. Bloodthirst is the best deck in the meta. If you're great. And if you have played for more than a season, you're going to be so bored. It's painful.
Yeah. Yeah,
weird. I may not have spent enough time with my build. I was still enjoying it whenever I wound up passing on it. But I'm a little curious. So what kind of adaptations have been made now post FAQ?
You focus on the prince's plans. You focus on making the Viper immune to anything with the necessary Martell attachments.
Mm-hmm.
You run the rivers. You run plot cycling. By plot about 6, or what should be about plot 6, you've cycled your whole deck. You have enough crap in your hand to give the Viper absolutely everything. They then have 2 turns, literally, because of unopposed, because of deadly, because of everything else, 2 turns to stop you from winning the Lost Oasis. If they don't stop you in those 2 turns through some miracle, and Gaston Gray, the old way, there are ways. You just have to be mixed. You just have to be very quick, very decisive, and very proclaiming.
Post FAQ, I don't know. You know, we haven't really played it over here. As far as how good it is, I couldn't see why it still couldn't be good. Even if you can't run Burning on the Sands, I mean, the only game that matters is still a fantastic card that people aren't really playing as much. That does give you pretty much the same vibe as Burning on the Sands.
Burning.
Right. Except for it's not going to work on the entry challenge. But still a good card and something to be thought of. So that was one of the first things that jumped into my mind, at least, would be, hey, run the only game that matters. I'll probably build a Bloodthirst deck, but I probably won't build it the way it probably should be built. Because I'm playing, we just started a new league and we've got a bunch of newer players, to be honest with you, and I like to just go there and have fun with everybody and make everyone, you know, leave feeling happy. And so if you run Bloodthirst the way that it has been run, tried and true, no one is leaving feeling satisfied.
Well, I mean, everyone loves Drakey, right? Like, if you don't love Drakey and you've been paying attention to the game for a while, I don't get you. But Drakey created the Bloodthirst, it's posted on Card Game DB, it's posted on the FFG boards. He created a plot icon manipulation Bloodthirst. That's really fun. It's not auto when it requires skill. It's very thoughtful. It's what Bloodthirst should have been to begin with. Mm-hmm. It's not what Bloodthirst is if you just want to win. But if you just want to win, maybe go home with fewer friends and less happy than you otherwise might.
Yeah, and I mean, post-FAQ, if you want to win, I don't know if Bloodthirst is right now is the way to go out of Martell. I mean, there's a lot of options. I mean, I'm not saying that deck still isn't good. I'm sure it is. But is it the best Martell deck right now? I don't know. I'm having a blast doing the Conquest stuff. A lot of awesome Martell Conquest stuff coming out, so.
It's a game of variance and a game of card draw. And card draw mitigates that variance. And when you make that variance non-existent, when you install the 3 or 4 plots, when you're drawing 6 cards at a time, it becomes a lot less a game of variance and more a game of, well, this won't let you do anything, so, I'll win eventually. That's how Greg lost Worlds. Greg had the best deck at Worlds, right? The Greyjoy character light. It was probably...
Oh, yeah. Worlds. Yep.
But without that extra draw, you can't mitigate variance. Bloodthirst says, you've got all the control in the world. Don't worry about variance.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, guys.
And there you have Aaron's take on Bloodthirst. I mean, it's... You're definitely on the side. It was a little too out of hand there. So hopefully it gets to a point where people can play it as I feel the designers had intended it to be played. So.
Yeah. I'll fiddle with it a little more again. I'd been meaning to try and update my build at some point. So, yeah, you know, we've got a Tulsa regional coming up at the end of June, our regional at the beginning of July. So now's the time to be exploring those options.
That's right. Now, hopefully, you've got some more ideas on what to run. Because I don't. That list actually made it worse.
What to be looking out for.
A lot of options. Yeah, definitely. Props and slops. Who's got a prop and a slop?
Slops are awesome. I have a really good.
Go ahead.
More than anything else besides Talisker Storm, the scotch I've been drinking for hours now, I want to prop the New York meta, which has been nothing but accepting, wonderful, and creative. We've got creative guys, we've got top-notch guys, and the Skype group, which is very much the same idea. It's a bunch of creative guys, it's a bunch of top-notch guys, and the mix is just the best you could possibly ask for. So?
Oh, man. Props and slops. I mean, I have so many. So many, it's a little time. I guess I'm just going to go ahead and prop Civ 5. I had bought Civ 5 over a year ago and had played my second game just the other day, and I'm having a blast with it. It's super fun. I'm hoping to find some committed fellows to play with me, because you can play multiplayer, you know, turn-based. And so over the course of however long it takes, but at least make a move every couple days, would be super fun to play some Civ 5. It's great. So if you've never played Civ 5, it feels really good to pull down your pants and flop it out with Washington to see whose is bigger. And guess what? Alexander's is always bigger, Washington, so stuff it. And that's what I did. I have a whole continent to myself. What do you guys have? Nothing. Took it. Which is great, because I enslave a lot of city-states and a lot of other cities. I just take control of them. Yet, one of my social policies is liberty. I give you the liberty to be ruled by me. So, it's a good time. So, if you haven't played Civ 5 yet, give it a shot. I don't know if it's on sale. I bought it when it was on sale for like $5 or something like that. But get it. Give it a shot. Will, you got one?
Yeah, I'm going to throw out some props here to the Heir to the Empire trilogy by Timothy Zahn, which is some Star Wars novels, which I think anybody that knows much or hardly anything at all about the Star Wars EU will definitely recognize them. They're regarded as some of the best. They introduce Mara Jade, they introduce Grand Admiral Thrawn, and so it's been, oh gosh, probably 10 years since I have read them, so I'm starting them back through and really enjoying it still.
Nice.
So one last slot for me. I want to prop Louie, which has started this new season. I was watching with my wife the other night, and as we're laying there, she's like, isn't this show supposed to be funny? Nah. No, not so much. It's kind of supposed to make you feel a little bit creepy. And
yeah,
feeling uncomfortable has a value in itself.
It really does. It really does. I love Louie. I don't know, it's that awkward, like, he just does all the jokes that, like, everyone thinks about, but you don't really talk about it, you know, and it's, like, it's funny, like, there's definitely funny parts in it, but, man, you just see how, like, depressing that guy's life is. It's amazing. It's amazing.
It seems pretty bad.
It's so good. It's so good, so. Oh, man. Where else am I at here? So many things to prop. I'm actually going to go ahead and prop organization, as weird as that is. We just moved into a new place.
The concept of being organized?
Yes. We just moved into our new place, and everyone who helped us, like, just moved all of our books and, like, all of our movies and games, like, literally just stuffed them all together. So we had books, movies, like, in no specific order, like, on all the shelves. Like, just, it was a mess. It was terrible. And for a second there, I thought I had lost my Mass Effect 1 copy.
Oh, no.
But I didn't. So that's good. I still have all three.
Yeah.
But anyways, I realized that I have, like, 10 of the Wheel of Time series books because of that organization. So, thanks, organization. I know now a book series that I need to read. I'm still reading, by the way, if everyone who was wondering. I know I was doing that. I failed my my New Year's resolution, just like 99.9% of the rest of America. But I'm most certainly still reading. I've just slowed down a little bit, just doing other things. But I'm still am, and I will definitely get to the Wheel of Time at some point. Although I have heard it's pretty dreadful, yeah, how long it goes. But I hear it's worth it in the end. So
yeah, definitely at least read the first like six books.
Oh, see,
despite being really long, there's a lot of really good parts. I was still interested through book six. I read through book eight before I gave up. At some point, maybe I'll just skip the other ones that Jordan wrote and just go straight to Sanderson. I don't know.
Wait, so you know how Geralt doesn't really like reading?
Yeah.
He's listing 1,000-page books that he's not going to finish.
Well, that's a good point. We can't even get him to read Game of Thrones, so...
Other shit.
It's pretty realistic. I mean, I'm definitely going to read the rest of the King Killer Chronicles, especially when the third book drops. Like, I'm going to get through that series, but you're right, but I've heard
they're
the Wheel of Time is
surprisingly fast reads.
Yeah, I've heard the Wheel of Time is just so good. You're right, though. I probably should read Game of Thrones at some point, but honestly, I'm probably going to have everything spoiled for me.
But honestly, he's not going to do it.
I'm probably not going to do it. Anybody else got a prop or a slop?
Yeah, I've got a prop. And that's to this past week's Game of Thrones episode, Mockingbird. So, spoiler alert, if you're listening to this show and have not read the books or watched that episode yet. But I really dug it. I thought, for instance, the Tyrion Red Viper scene was really well done. And maybe there are a couple listeners that'll agree with me. The friends I was watching the show with just looked at me like I was an idiot when I was talking about this, but I really liked how they did the lighting in that episode and had the Viper's face half in light and half in shadow while he's telling his stories and talking with Tyrion, and you don't really know for sure what he came for and which side he's going to go on. I mean, if you've not already read the novels and know anyway, but... I like how they played with that, and then he gets up to leave and reaches for the torch and turns around, you know, facing into the camera, and everything is bright and lit, and he's holding out this light, you know, of hope to Tyrion, and says that he will be his champion. And I thought that really reinforced that scene very nicely.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And of course, there was my favorite Littlefinger scene so far in the novels. Though they did tweak his line slightly, he did not say "only cat," which made me sad. But you know, viewers probably wouldn't have remembered who that was at this point. It seems to be the common theory, so I'll live with it. It was still extremely gratifying.
All right, well, thanks, everybody, for listening to another episode of Two Champs and a Chump. If you would be so kind, you know that you can like us on Facebook, our Facebook page, facebook.com/twochampsandachump. You can hit us up on Twitter, at twitter.com/twochampsonechump. Google+, I've said it a million times, I'll say it a million more. It's still a thing, because Google is forcing you to use it with YouTube, and they've recently acquired Twitch, I believe, so who knows what fun that's going to entail, so... Like us on Google+. Email us, twochampsonechump@gmail.com. Seriously, we love to talk to you guys. We love to hear more ideas. We love to communicate with you. Even if you want to just send us an email telling us we're a bunch of assholes and we don't know what we're talking about, go ahead and send it.
Send that one directly to Daryl.
Send that one to me. You can like my Twitter, @DarylLloyd@twitter.com. So you can send that one to me. I will be that person. Not the one that you deserve, but the one you need. Yeah. So somebody do our outro.
Danger Zone?
ghost.